This month, a federal judge gave the go-ahead to a salvage company hoping to retrieve a telegraph machine from the wreck of the Titanic, despite pleas from some that doing so would amount to grave robbery. The company, called RMS Titanic, wants to recover the sunken ship's wireless Marconi telegraph, which was used to call for help after the ship struck an iceberg on April 14, 1912. That moment was depicted in this deleted scene from James Cameron's 1997 film Titanic.
Maybe we should try that new distress call. SOS. It may be our only chance to use it.
The mission's backers described the Marconi as the last voice of the Titanic, but lawyers for the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration argued in court that the expedition to retrieve it could disturb the site, which was declared a memorial more than 30 years ago. David Gallo is an oceanographer and consultant to RMS Titanic. He has led numerous deep sea expeditions, including the successful attempt to locate the wreck of Air France Flight 447 in the Atlantic Ocean. David Gallo, welcome.
Thanks, Jeremy. My pleasure to be here.
Well, and the Marconi device was one of the first of its kind, but what is so important about getting it now? What is the significance?
Well, we've done, beginning in 2010, we conducted, with RMS Titanic, Inc., a scientific expedition to the ship. So we mapped it entirely with cameras and with sonars. And so we want to know what's there and what shapes it's in. And the, one of the things that really stood out was the ceiling above the Marconi room that maybe 10, 20 years ago it was perforated. Now it's seriously perforated. There's gaping holes. And you can see elements of the Marconi through that, through those perforations. In fact, the ceiling there is so thin in spots, if you could, you could stick your fingers through the spot. So the worry is that that ceiling will soon collapse before anyone gets back there again. And we were asking for permission that on our next expedition, if we took a close look and determined that there was imminent risk to the Marconi, that we would be prepared to retrieve it, if we did it with minimal damage to the ship itself.
Well, and when was the last time anyone observed the wreckage?
Just last summer, there was a group that went out, a couple of dives on Titanic. They saw the same thing. It took some photos of the Titanic, of that area of the ship, and reported back that, in their mind, the ship was deteriorating faster than they expected.
Well, and given that, what is the risk, the technical challenge of going in there to try to retrieve this Marconi device?
It's pretty intense, because I think some people think it's like driving out to the desert and looking at a archaeological site or something like that. I mean, that's difficult too, but we're talking about a journey to an unknown planet, the deep sea. So you have to have the right kinds of equipment. It's perpetually dark. It's cold in that area. You can't use GPS. There are no lights. You've got to bring your own power. And so we're trying to conduct, in many cases, almost laparoscopic surgery. So we want to be absolutely sure we know where the robots, if we're using robots, where that robot is, what's touching what, and all that. And so plus that, working around a shipwreck can be very difficult too. Lots of cables, lots of sharp edges. The way around that is to assemble the best team, with the experience and talent, the best technology that's available to get the job done, and then to put it all together into an operational plan. And that's what gives us the most confidence that this can be done if we see fit to do it.
Now, you testified in court that you used to consider the idea of excavating the shipwreck grave robbery. What changed in your mind?
Yeah, when I came to Woods Hole in 1987, that's right after Bob Ballard and team had just gone out in 86 and really did a survey with the submarine Elvin. And so I was not that interested in Titanic, but it seemed wrong to me to disturb, quote unquote, a grave site, and especially to recover anything from that site. And it was the artifact exhibits that exist, I always thought was, in fact, I was told they were off limits for us to go visit that site, to lend any credence to it. But, you know, I did one day, I wandered through that site, and when I witnessed some of the families coming in, the kids, the adults, having an experience, a one-on-one experience with parts of Titanic, not some simile, not some, replica, but that's their ability to have an experience with Titanic, that changed my mind completely. Then I said, okay, I understand the importance of this, that they don't need a Dave Gallo or a Bob Ballard or a James Cameron or whoever, to tell them what to think and what they're seeing it firsthand themselves.
Lawyers for the government who opposed this mission said it seems clear that this is not simply a one-off proposal for the Telegraph, but a placeholder for future requests to take similar actions in order to recover other artifacts from inside the wreck. What about that? Will there be more missions now that this has been greenlit?
You know, Jeremy, like many things, I just don't know where some of these thoughts are coming from. It's really, in some cases, it's surprising to me. In other cases, I find them hurtful to be called a grave robber. Let's see, a greedy treasure hunter. And that's another common one is that, oh, you know what, this is going to open the floodgates. No, we're not opening up any floodgates. In my 10 years of association with RMS Titanic Inc., and as a consultant for the last year, I've never once heard anything to do with recovering artifacts, especially for money's sake. It's always to do the right thing by the ship. It's always to strengthen the legacy of the ship and the to honor the passengers that sailed on board that ship, and especially those that died that night. So I don't know where this concept comes from. Maybe some people will look at it as a landmark case that if this goes through, then therefore it sets a precedent. But, you know, this is a special case, not something that we ever considered to open the doors for future recovery.
Well, when you talk about those that died that night, 2,208 passengers and crew were on board, and only about 700 of them survived the Titanic.
Right.
When is this going to happen, and are you confident you're going to be able to get the funding for it and be able to carry it out in the middle of the coronavirus pandemic?
Yeah, that's a job. I'm not involved in that loop. You know, so my job is just to help put the expedition together. So that's done by a different part of the company, and my understanding is things are going very well, exceedingly well. But the attraction to Titanic is pretty amazing. So gaining the kinds of funding to do it and the attention of media especially to go out there has been, I'm told, pretty easy. So I'm pretty confident. But, you know, beyond that, we're not going to go until we're ready to go. So if the initial idea for this expedition was to continue the work we started in 2010, purely scientific, and during that process, we'll have a better look at the Marconi area and determine whether it's in imminent danger. So when we're ready to do that and made that clear to the judge, even if we got permission, we may choose not to do that.
You know, when you talk about sending robots in to a ship that's deteriorating and grabbing this thing that you know is there, I'm just picturing myself at one of those claw machines in the arcade trying to get the stuffed animal, and you never can do it. It's very difficult.
That's why I said earlier that we've got the best talent, the best pilots, right. The best tools. Believe me, no one, especially me, wants to leave some mark on that ship. That's, you know, that would horrify me. And every time we go through an iteration of a plan, we go through it again and again and again. What can we improve? And now we're to the point where we may not have to do any cutting at all to remove pieces, that we can reach in with an articulator arm. That would help you in those arcade games and actually reach down into that space and recover easy things. Not to try to pull up all the stuff that's bolted to the deck, but other things that can be used to show what the Marconi was like when it was nearly brand new.
David Gallo, what other projects are you working on right now when it comes to things deep under the sea?
Well, I retired a few years ago, and I've been busier than ever. And the one thing that, you know, I thought time to leave the deep ocean for younger kids, but when I saw this situation with Titanic, I can't help but be involved. So, you know, because of Titanic, we were involved in the Air France, a successful search for Air France 447. Once we proved that we could use robots, go deep, find things in impossible places, we got the okay to do the Air France search. So, you know, my focus right now is toward climate change and what that means. Titanic's a great portal for that, to get people interested in the deep sea, tell them why it's difficult to work there, and then how important it is to understand the deep sea with regard to climate change. So I've got the one shipwreck, Titanic, which is amazing to me, and then trying to help people understand climate change, what the risks are, and what we can do about it.
That is David Gallo, who is an oceanographer and consultant to RMS Titanic. He's part of a planned expedition to retrieve a telegraph device from the famous shipwreck later this year. David Gallo, thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Jeremy.